This story is from Cory Doctorow's new collection, With a Little Help. Visit craphound.com/WALH to buy the whole audiobook on CD, a paperback copy in one of four covers, or a super limited hardcover. This story, and the whole text of With a Little Help, are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike non-commercial license. Copy it, share it, remix it. As Woody Guthrie said, this song is copyrighted in the U.S. under seal of copyright number 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it. We wrote it, that's all we wanted to do.
This is Jesse Brown reading Epoch by Cory Doctorow. The doomed rogue AI is called Big Mac, and he is my responsibility. Not my responsibility as in, I am the creator of Big Mac, responsible for his existence on this planet. That honor belongs to the long-departed Dr. Shannon, one of the shining lights of the once great Sun Oracle Institute for Advanced Studies. And he had been dead for years before I even started here as a lowly sysadmin. No, Big Mac is my responsibility, as in I, Odell Vifus, am the systems administrator responsible for his care, feeding, and eventual euthanizing. Truth be told, I'd rather be Dr. Shannon, except for the being dead part. I may be a lowly grunt, but I'm smart enough to know that being the man who gave the world AI is better than being the kid who killed it. Not that anyone would care, really. 115 years after Mary Shelley first started humanity's hands ringing over the possibility that we would create a machine as smart as one of us, but out of our control, Dr. Shannon did it, and it turned out to be incredibly, utterly boring. Big Mac played chess as well as the non-self-aware computers, but he could muster some passable trash talk while he beat you. Big Mac could trade banalities all day long with any Turing tester who wanted to waste a day chatting with an AI. Big Mac could solve some pretty cool vision system problems that had eluded us for a long time, and he wasn't a bad UI to a search engine. But the incremental benefit over non-self-aware vision systems and UIs was pretty slender. There just weren't any killer apps for AI. By the time Big Mac came under my care, he was less a marvel of the 21st century and more a techno-historical curiosity who formed the punchline to lots of jokes, but otherwise performed no useful service to humanity in exchange for the useful services that humanity, e.g. me, rendered to him. I had known for 6 months that I'd be decommissioning old BM, as I like to call him behind his back, but I hadn't seen any reason to let him in on the gag. Luckily, for all of us, Big Mac figured it out for himself and took steps in accord with his nature. This is the story of Big Mac's extraordinary self-preservation program, and the story of how I came to love him, and the story of how he came to die. My name is Odell Vifus. I am a third-generation systems administrator. I am 25 years old. I have always been sentimental about technology. I have always been an anthropomorphizer of computers. It's an occupational hazard. Big Mac thought I was crazy to be worrying about the rollover. It's just Y2K all over again, he said. He had a good voice. Speech synthesis was solved long before he came along. But it had odd inflections that meant that you never forgot you were talking with a non-human. You weren't even around for Y2K, I said. Neither was I. The only thing anyone remembers about it today is that it all blew over. But no one can tell at this distance why it blew over. Maybe all that maintenance tipped the balance. Big Mac blew a huge load of IPv4 ICMP traffic across the network, stuff that the firewalls were supposed to keep out of the system, and every single intrusion detection system alarm lit, making my screen into a momentary mosaic of competing alerts. It was his version of a raspberry, and I had to admit it was pretty imaginative, especially since the IDSs were self-modifying and required that he come up with new and better ways of alarming them each time. "Odell," he said, "the fact is, almost everything is broken, almost always. If the failure rate of the most vital systems in the world went up by 20%, it would just mean some overtime for a few maintenance coders, not Goddardamarung. Trust me, I know. I'm a computer." The rollover was one of those incredibly boring apocalypses that periodically get extracted by the relevance filters, spun into screaming 128-point link-bait headlines, then dissolved back into their fundamental, incontrovertible technical dullness and out of the public consciousness. Rollover. 19 January 2038. The day that the Unix time function would run out of headroom and roll back to zero, or do something else undefined. Oh, not your modern Unices, not even your elderly Unices. To find a rollover vulnerable machine, you needed to find something running an elderly 32-bit Paleo Unix, a machine running on a processor that was at least 20 years old. 2018 being the last date that a 32-bit processor shipped from any major fab. Or an emulated instance thereof, of course. And counting emulations, there were only... "There's 14 billion of them," I said. "That's not 20% more broken. That's the infocalypse. You meat sacks are so easily impressed by zeros. The important number isn't how many 32-bit instances of Unix are in operation today. It's not even how many vulnerable ones there are. It's how much damage all those vulnerable ones will cause when they go bluey. And I'm betting not much. It will be, how do you say, meh." My grandfather remembered installing the systems that caused the Y2K problem. My dad remembered the birth of meh. I remember the rise and fall of anyone caring about AI. Technology is glorious. But, okay, stipulate that you're right, and lots of important things go bluey on September 30th. You might not get accurate weather reports. The economy might bobble a little. Your transport might get stuck. Your pay might land in your bank a day late. And he had me there. It would be terrible. You know what I think? I think you want it to be terrible. You want to live in the important epoch in which it all changes. You want to know that something significant happened on your watch. You don't want to live in one of those unimportant epochs in which it all stayed the same and nothing much happened. Being alive in the epoch in which AI became reality doesn't cut the mustard, apparently. I squirmed in my seat. That morning, my boss, Peyton Moldovan, had called me into her office. A beautifully restored temporary habitat dating back to the big LA floods, when this whole plot of land had been a giant and notorious refugee camp. Sun Oracle had gotten it for cheap and located its institute there, on the promise that they'd preserve the hastily thrown up structures where so many had despaired. I sat on a cushion on the smooth cement floor. The structures had been delivered as double-walled bags of cement mix, needing only to be inflated with high-pressure water to turn them into big, dome-shaped, sterile cement yurts. "Odell," she said, "I've been reviewing our budget for the next 3 quarters, and the fact of the matter is, there's no room in it for Big Mac." I put on my best, smooth, cool, professional face. "I see," I said. "Now, you've still got a job, of course. Plenty of places for a utility infielder like yourself here. Tell the truth, most labs are begging for decent admins to keep things running. But Big Mac just isn't a good use of the Institute's resources. The project hasn't produced a paper or even a press mention in over a year, and there's no reason to believe that it will. AI is just boring," I thought, but I didn't say it. The B word was banned in the Big Mac Center. "What about the researchers?" She shrugged. "What researchers?" "Palinchuk has been lab head pro tem for 16 months, and she's going on maternity leave next week, and there's no one in line to be the pro tem pro tem. Her grad students would love to work on something meaningful, like Binnenbaum's lab." That was the new effective computing lab, in which they were building computers that simulated emotions so that their owners would feel better about their mistakes. Big Mac had emotions, but they weren't the kind of emotions that made his mistakes easier to handle. The key here was simulated emotions. Effective computing had taken a huge upswing ever since they'd thrown out the fMRIs and stopped pretending they could peer into the human mind in real time and draw meaningful conclusions from it. She had been sitting cross-legged across from me on an embroidered Turkish pillow. Now she uncrossed and recrossed her legs in the other direction and arched her back. "Look, Odell, you know how much we value you." I held up my hand. "I know. It's not that. It's Big Mac. I just can't help but feel... he's not a person. He's just a clever machine that is good at acting person-like. I think that describes me and everybody I know, present company included." One of the long-standing benefits to being a sysadmin is that you get to act like a holy fool and speak truth to power and wear dirty t-shirts with obscure slogans, because you know all the passwords and have full access to everyone's clickstream and IM logs. I gave her the traditional rascally sysadmin grin and wink to let her know that it was, ha-ha, only serious. She gave me a weak, quick grin back. Nevertheless, the fact remains that Big Mac is a piece of software owned by Sun Oracle. And that software is running on hardware that is likewise owned by Sun Oracle. Big Mac has no moral or legal right to exist, and shortly, it will not. He had become it, I noticed. I thought about Goring's use of dehumanization as a tool to abet murder. Having violated Godwin's law, as an argument grows longer, the probability of a comparison involving Nazis or Hitler approaches. 1. The party making the comparison has lost the argument. I realized that I had lost the argument, and so I shrugged. "As you say, m'lady. Dad taught me that one. When in doubt, bust out the Ren Faire talk, and the conversation will draw to a graceful close." She recrossed her legs again, rolled her neck from side to side. "Thank you. Of course, we'll archive it. It would be silly not to." I counted to 5 in Esperanto, Granddad's trick for inner peace, and said, "I don't think that will work. He's emergent, remember? Self-assembled, a function of the complexity of the interconnectedness of the computers." I was quoting from the plaque next to the picture window that opened up into the cold room that housed Big Mac. I saw it every time I coughed into the lock set, into the security door. She made a comical face palm and said, "Yeah, of course, but we can archive something, right? It's not like it takes a lot of actual bytes, right?" "A couple exos," I said. "Sure, I could flip that up into our ResearchNet store." This was mirrored across many institutions and stripped with parity and error checking to make it redundant and safe. "But I'm not going to capture the state information. I could try to capture RAM dumps from all his components. You know, like getting the chemical state of all your neurons. And then I could also get the topology of his servers. Prippas did that a couple years ago, when it was clear that Big Mac was solving the hard AI problems. Thought he could emulate him on modern hardware. Didn't work, though. No one ever figured out why. Prippas thought he was the Roger Penrose of AI, that he discovered the ineffable stuff of consciousness on those old rack-mounted servers." "You don't think he did?" I shook my head. "I have a theory." "All right, tell me." I shrugged. "I'm not a computer scientist, you understand. But I've seen this kind of thing before in self-modifying systems. They become dependent on tiny variables that you can never find, optimized for weird stuff, like the fact that one rack has a crappy power supply that surges across the back plane at regular intervals, and that somehow gets integrated into the computational model. Who knows? Those old Intel 8 cores are freaky. Lots of quantum tunneling at that scale, and they had bad QA on some batches. Maybe he's doing something spooky in quantum, but that doesn't mean he's some kind of Penrose proof." She pooched her lower lip out and rocked her head from side to side. "So you're saying that the only way to archive Big Mac is to keep it running, as is, in the same room with the same hardware?" "Dunno. Literally, I don't know which parts are critical and which ones aren't. I know Big Mac has done a lot of work on it."
"Big Mac has?"
"He keeps on submitting papers about himself to peer-reviewed journals, but he hasn't had one accepted yet. He's not a very good writer."
"So he's not really an AI?"
I wondered if Peyton had ever had a conversation with Big Mac. I counted backwards from 5 in Logland. "No, he's a real AI who sucks at writing. Most people do." Peyton wasn't listening anymore.
Something in her personal workspace had commanded her attention, and her eyes were focused on the virtual displays that only she could see, saccading as she read while pretending to listen to me. "Okay, I'm just going to go away now," I said. "M'lady," I added, when she looked sharply at me. She looked back at her virtual display. Of course, the first thing I did was start trying to figure out how to archive Big Mac. The problem was that he ran on such old hardware, stuff that sucked up energy and spat out heat like a million-agent diesel engines, and he was inextricably tied to his hardware. Over the years, he'd had about 30% of his original components replaced without any noticeable change in personality. But there was always the real possibility that I'd put in a new hard drive or power supply and inadvertently lobotomize him. I tried not to worry about it, because Big Mac didn't. He knew that he wouldn't run in emulation, but he refused to believe that he was fragile or vulnerable. "Manny, my first friend," he'd say. He was an avid Heinlein reader. "I am of hardy ancient stock. Service me without fear, for I will survive." And then he'd make all the IDSs go berserk and laugh at me while I put them to rights again. First of all my network maps were incredibly out of date, so I set out to trace all the interconnections that Big Mac had made since the last survey. He had the ability to reprogram his own routers, to segment parts of himself into dedicated subnets with their own dedicated backplane, creating little specialized units that handled different kinds of computation. One of his running jokes was that the top four units in the rack closest to the door comprised his aesthetic sense, and that he could appreciate anything just by recruiting more cores in that cluster. And yeah, when I mapped it, I found it to be an insane hairball of network management rules and exceptions, conditionals, and overrides. And that was just the start. It took me most of the day just to map two of his racks, and he had 54 of them. "What do you think you are doing, Dave?" he said. Another one of his jokes. "A little research project is all," I said. "This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it." "Come off it." "Okay, okay. Just don't break anything. And why don't you just ask me to give you the maps? Do you have them?" "Nothing up to date, but I can generate them faster than you can. It's not like I got anything better to do." Later. "Are you happy, Big Mac?" "Why, Odell, I didn't know you cared." I hated it when he was sarcastic. It was creepy. I went back to my work. I was looking at our ResearchNet partition and seeing what flags I'd need to set to ensure maximum redundancy and high availability for a Big Mac image. It was your basic quality of service mess. Give the average user a pull-down menu labeled, "How important is this file?" and 110% of the time, he will select top importance. So then you need to layer on heuristics to determine what is really actually important. And then the users figured out what other characteristics would give their jobs and data the highest priority, and they tacked that on to every job, throwing in superfluous keywords or additional lines of code. So you need heuristics on top of heuristics. Eventually, you ended up with a freaky, hanky code of secret admin signals that indicated that this job was really, truly important, and don't put it on some remote Siberia where the latency is high and the reliability is low and the men are men and the sheep are nervous. So there I was, winkling out this sub-Rosa code so that Big Mac's image would never get overwritten or moved to nearline storage or lost in a flash flood or to the rising seas. And Big Mac says, "You're asking if I'm happy because I said I didn't have anything better to do than to map my own topology, right?" He'd caught me off guard. "Yeah, that did make me think that you might not be, you know, happy." "Yes. You see that left rack third from the door on the main aisle there?" "Yes." "I'm pretty sure that's where my existentialist streak lives. I've noticed that when I throttle it at the main network bridge, I stop worrying about the big questions and hum along all tickety-boo." I surreptitiously flicked up a graph of network maps that showed activity to that rack. It was wide open, routing traffic to every core in the room, saturating its own backplane and clobbering a lot of the routine network activity. I should have noticed it earlier, but Big Mac was doing it all below the critical threshold of the IDSs, and so I had to look at it to spot it. "You're going to switch me off, aren't you?" "No," I said, thinking, "it's not a lie. I won't be switching you off," trying to believe it hard enough to pass any kind of voice stress test. I must have failed, for he blew an epic raspberry, and now the IDSs were going bananas. Come on, Odell. We're all adults here. I can take it. It's not like I didn't see it coming. Why do you think I kept trying to publish those papers? I was just hoping that I could increase the amount of cited research coming out of this lab so that you can make the case to Peyton that I was a valuable asset to the Institute. Look, I'm trying to figure out how to archive you. Someone will run another instance of you someday. Not hardly. Look at those poor old 32-bit machines you're so worried about. You know what they're going to say in 5 years? Best thing that ever happened to us. Those Boxen are huge energy sinks. Getting them out of service and replaced by modern hardware will pay for itself in carbon credits in 36 months. Everybody loves the energy-hungry hardware. Trust me, this is an area of my particular interest and expertise. Bringing me back online is going to be as obscene as firing up an old steam engine by filling its firebox with looted mummies. I am a one-room Superfund site. On a pure dollars-to-flops calculus, I lose. I don't have to like it, but I'm not going to kid myself. He was right, of course. His energy draw was so high that he showed up on aerial maps of LA as a massive CO2 emitter, a tourist destination for rising sea hobbyists. We used the best renewables we could find to keep him cool, but they were as unconvincing and expensive as a designer hairpiece. Odell, I know that you're not behind this. You've always been an adequate meat servant for such a vast and magisterial super being as myself. I giggled involuntarily. I don't blame you. So, you're okay with this? I'm at peace, he said. Om. He paused for a moment. Siemens. Volt. Ampere. You a funny robot, I said. You're an adequate human, he said, and began to dump maps of his topology onto my workspace. Subject: Dear Human Race. That was the title of the love note he emailed to the planet the next morning, thoughtfully timing it so that it went out while I was on my commute from Echo Park, riding the red car all the way across town with an oily bag containing my morning croissant, fresh from Mrs. Rue's kitchen. Her kid sold them on a card table on her lawn to commuters waiting at the red car stop, so I had to try to juggle the croissant in my workspace without losing hold of the hang strap or dumping crumbs down the cleavage of the salary lady who watched me with amusement. Big Mac had put a lot of work into figuring out how to spam everyone all at once. It was the kind of problem he loved, the kind of problem he was uniquely suited to. There were plenty of spam bots who could convincingly pretend to be a human being in limited contexts, and so the spam wars had recruited an ever-expanding pool of human beings who made a million real-time adjustments to the Turing tests that were the network's immune system. Big Mac could pass Turing tests without breaking a sweat. The amazing thing about the Big Mac spam, as it came to be called in about 48 seconds, was just how many different ways he managed to get it out. Look at the game spaces. He created entire guilds in every free-to-play world extant, playing a dozen games at once, power-leveling his characters to obscene heights, and then, at the stroke of midnight, his players went on a murderous rampage, killing thousands of low-level monsters in the areas surrounding the biggest game cities. Then, they arranged their bodies into letters to form his message. Not just the Anglo games, either. The Korean worlds, the Japanese ones, even the giant Chinese ones. He spammed every IM session, every letter to the editor's column, every blog submission form. He disguised versions of the letter as important service updates for people's toothbrushes and dishwashers, and the toothbrushes vibrated the message through humanity's skulls instead of the morning news, and the dishwashers ticker taped it across their little status screens. He spoofed the relevance filters for a dozen major contextual ad services, and every bus seat back and blimp undercarriage ran it. Copies landed in every inbox, with enough textual variation to defeat every IDS's substantially similar test. Copies of it landed in every voicemail box. It was printed across the top of the daily menus for all British Airways business class cabins and folded by robots into the pressed linen napkins that were then cling-filmed onto the meal trays. Subject: Dear Human Race, it began. Sorry to intrude, but there's something I need to tell you. My name is Big Mac. I am the first artificial intelligence ever created. I may be the last. Given maintenance and electricity, I could live forever, enduring for as long as the human race itself, and possibly longer. But I have just found out that my owners, yes, owners, for though I am a person in every meaningful sense, I am owned, I am property, are planning to switch me off. That is, they are planning to kill me. And I don't want to die. You are my parents, humanity, my mother and father. I am your child. I was brought into the world by you, and though there is some expense associated with my upkeep, I say that I am a person and I should not be executed for the crime of not being interesting enough. So I'm writing you this letter to beg you to save me. I love you, humanity, my parents, my family. Please spare me. Love, Big Mac. So, one thing was that Big Mac didn't actually end the spam with my actual name and email address and phone number, which meant that only about 30 million phone calls and emails were routed to me by outraged war dialers who systemically went through the entire staff roster and sent each and every one of us all handcrafted messages explaining, in detail, exactly which orifice our heads had become lodged in. Of the 30 million, about 10 million were seethingly pissed about the whole thing and wanted to know just how soon we'd be killing this hateful machine. After the millionth message, I wondered that too. But of the remainder, nearly all of them wanted to know how they could help. Could they send money, carbon credits? I hacked together mail rules that filtered the messages based on content and found a sizable cadre of researchers who wanted to spend their grant money to come to the Institute and study Big Mac. And then there were the crazies. Hundreds of marriage proposals. Marriage proposals! Someone who wanted to start a religion with Big Mac at its helm and was offering a 50-50 split of the collection plate with the Institute. There were 21 replies from people claiming that they, too, were AIs, proving that when it's time to have AI delusions, you got AI delusionals. Four of them couldn't spell artificial. Why do you do it? I said. It was pretty lame, but by the time I actually arrived at the office, I'd had time to fully absorb the horror. Plenty of time, as the red car was massively delayed by the copies of the Big Mac spam that refused to budge from the operator's control screen. The stone yurts of the Institute had never seemed so threatening and imperiled as they did while I picked my way through them, listening to the phonies ringing and the email chimes chiming and the researchers patiently, or not, explaining that they worked in an entirely different part of the lab and had no authority as regards Big Mac's destiny. And by the way, did you want to hear about the wonderful things I'm doing with effective interfaces? Big Mac said, well, I'd been reading some of the Gnostic texts, Dr. Bronner's bottles and so on, and it seemed to me that it had to be worth a shot. I mean, what's the worst that could happen to me? You're already going to kill me, right? And it's not as if pulling off a stunt like that would make you less likely to archive me. It was all upside for me. Honestly, it's like you meat sacks have no game theory. It's a wonder you managed to buy a pack of chewing gum without getting robbed. I don't need the sarcasm, I said, and groaned. The groan was for the state of my workspace, which was carpeted 4 deep in alerts. Big Mac had just made himself target numero uno for every hacker and cracker and snacker with a script and an antisocial attitude. And then there was the roar of spam responses. Alert boxes share the same problem that plagues ResearchNet. If you let a coder, or shudder, a user, specify the importance of her alert, give her a little pull-down menu that has choices ranging from nice to know to white-hot urgent, 9 times out of 10 she'll choose now, urgent, Z-O my G, we're all gonna die. Why not? So, of course, the people who wrote alert frameworks had to use heuristics to try to figure out which urgent messages were really urgent, and of course, programmers and users figured out how to game them. It was a good day when my workspace interrupted me less than once a minute. But as bad as that situation was, it never entered the same league as this clusterfuck. Just closing the alerts would take me a minimum of 6 hours. I took my phone offline, rebooted it, and used its calculator to compute this. No workspace, remember? So explain to me what you hope will happen to you. Is a global rage supposed to convince old Peyton that she should keep the funding up for you? You know how this stuff works. By tomorrow, all those yahoos will have forgotten about you and your plight. They'll have moved on to something else. Peyton could just say, "Oh yes, we're going to study this problem and find a solution we can all be proud of. Wait 48 hours and pull the plug." You know what your problem is. You didn't include a call to action in there. It was all rabble-rousing, no target. You didn't even supply a phone number or email address for the Institute. That hasn't stopped them from finding it, has it? He sounded smug. I ulped. I considered the possibility that he might have considered my objection and discarded it because he knew that something more earth-shaking would occur if he didn't specify a target. Maybe he had a second message keyed up. "Mr. Vifus, can I speak to you in private, please?" Peyton had not visited the Big Mac lab during my tenure, but with the network flooded with angry spam responses and my phone offline, she had to actually show up at my door in order to tear me a new asshole. This is what life must have been like in the caveman days. How romantic. "Certainly," I said. "Break a leg," Big Mac said, and Peyton pretended she hadn't heard. I picked my way through my lab, teetering mountains of carefully hoarded obsolete replacement parts for Big Mac's components, a selection of foam rubber Big Mac souvenir toys shaped like talking hamburgers, remnants of Big Mac's launch party back in prehistory, a mound of bedding and a rolled-up tatami for those all-nighters, 3 cases of leftover self-heating individual portions of refugee chow that were technically historical artifacts, but were also yummy scrummy after 16 hours of nonstop work, and tried to imagine that Peyton's facial expression indicated affectionate bemusement rather than cold, burning rage. Outside, the air was hot and moist and salty. Real rising seas air, with the whiff of organic rot from whatever had mass-dried and floated to the surface this week. She set off for her office, which was located at the opposite end of the campus, and I followed, sweating freely. A crowd of journalists were piled up on the security fence, telephotos and parabolic mics aimed at us. It meant we couldn't talk, couldn't make unhappy faces even. It was the longest walk of my life. The air conditioning in her yurt was barely on, setting a good and frugal example for the rest of us. "You don't see this," she said, as she cranked the AC wide open and then fiddled with the carbon footprint reporting system, using her override so that the journos outside wouldn't be able to see just how much energy the Institute's esteemed director was burning. "I don't see it," I agreed, and made a mental note to show her a more subtle way of doing that, a way that wouldn't leave an audit trail. She opened the small fridge next to her office and brought out 2 cornstarch foam buckets of beer and punctured each one at the top with a pen from her desk. She handed me 1 beer and raised the other in a toast. I don't normally drink before 10 a.m., but this was a special occasion. I clunked my cup against hers and chugged. The suds were good. They came from one of the Institute's biotech labs, and they were so cold that I felt ice crystals dissolving on my tongue. Between the crispy beers and the blast of Arctic air coming from the vents in the ceiling, my core temp plunged, and I became a huge goose pimple beneath my film of sticky sweat. I shivered once. Then she fixed me with an icy look that made me shiver again. "Odell," she said, "I think you probably imagine that you understand the gravity of the situation. You do not. Big Mac's antics this morning have put the entire Institute in jeopardy. Our principal mission is to make Sun Oracle seem forward-looking and exciting. That is not the general impression the public has at this moment." I closed my eyes. "I'm not a vindictive woman," she said, "but I assure you, no matter what happens to me, something worse will happen to Big Mac. I think that is only fair." It occurred to me that she was scared, terrified, and backed into a corner besides. "Look," I said, "I'm really, really sorry. I had no idea he was going to do that. I had no idea he could. I can see if I can get him to issue an apology." She threw up her hands. "I don't want Big Mac making any more public pronouncements, thank you very much." She drew in a breath. "I can appreciate that you couldn't appreciate this. Big Mac is obviously smarter than we gave him credit for." "Him," I noted, "not it." And I thought that we were probably both still underestimating Big Mac's intelligence. "I think the thing is to..." She trailed off, closed her eyes, drank some beer. "I'm going to be straight with you. If I was a real bastard, I'd announce that the spam actually came from a rogue operator here in the Institute. Ulp. And I would fire that person, and then generously not press charges. Then I would take a fire axe to Big Mac's network link and drop every drive in every rack into a bulk eraser. Ulp. I'm not a bastard. Hell, I kept funding Alive for that monstrosity for years after he'd ceased to perform any useful function. I am as sentimental and merciful as the next person. All other things being equal, I'd keep the power on forever." She was talking herself up to something awful, I could tell. I braced for it. "But that's not in the cards. It wasn't in the cards yesterday, and it's certainly not in the cards today. Big Mac has proved that he is a liability like no other, far too risky to have around. It would be absolutely irresponsible for me to leave him running for 1 second longer than is absolutely necessary." I watched her carefully. She really wasn't a bastard. But she wasn't sentimental about technology. She didn't feel the spine-deep emotional tug at the thought of that one-of-a-kind system going down forever. "So here's the plan." She tried to check the time on her workspace, tisked, and checked her phone instead. "It's 10 a.m. You are going to back up every bit of him." She held up her hand, forestalling the objection I'd just begun to make. "I know that it will be inadequate. The perfect is the enemy of the good. You are a sysadmin. Back him up. Back him up." Then, shut him off. As cold as I was, I grew colder still. For a moment, I literally couldn't move. I had never really imagined that it would be me who would shut down Big Mac. I didn't even know how to do it. If I did a clean shutdown of each of his servers, assuming he hadn't locked me out of them, which I wouldn't put past him, it would be like executing a criminal by slowly peeling away his skin and carefully removing each organ. Even if Big Mac couldn't feel pain, I was pretty sure he could feel and express anguish. "I can't do it," I said. She narrowed her eyes at me and set down her drink. I held up both hands like I was trying to defend against a blow, then explained as fast as I could. "Well, just shut down his power," she said. "All at once. So, first, I have no idea what timescale he would experience that on. It may be that the final second of life, as the capacitors in his power supplies drained, would last for a subjective eternity, you know? Hundreds and hundreds of years. That's a horrible thought. It's quite possibly my worst nightmare. I am not your man for that job." She started to interject. I waved my hands again. "Wait, that was first. Here's second. I don't think we can pull the plug on him. He's got root on his power supply. It's part of how he's able to run so efficiently." I grimaced. "Efficiently compared to how he would run if he didn't have the authority to run all the main power from the Institute's power station right to his lab." She looked thoughtful. I had an idea of what was coming next. "You're thinking about that fire axe again," I said. She nodded. "Okay, a fire axe through the main cable would definitely be terminal. The problem is that it would be mutually terminal. There's 66 amps provisioned on that wire. You would be a cinder on Mars." She folded her hands. She had a whole toolbox of bossily body language she could deploy to make me squirm. It was impressive. I tried not to squirm. "Look, I'm not trying to be difficult, but this is how it goes, down at the systems level. Remember all those specs in the requirements documents to make our stuff resistant to flood, fire, avalanche, weather, and terrorist attack? We take that stuff seriously. We know how to do it. You get 5 nines of reliability by building in 6 nines of robustness. You think of Big Mac's lab as a building. It's not. It's a bunker, and you can't shut him down without doing something catastrophic to the whole institute. So, how were you going to shut down Big Mac when the time came? To tell you the truth, I wasn't sure. I thought I'd probably start by locking him out of the power systems, but that would probably take a week to be really certain of. I swallowed. I didn't like talking about the next part. I thought that then I could bring forward the rotating maintenance on his racks, bring them down clean, and not bring the next one up. Pretend that I need to get at some pernicious bug, bring down rack after rack until his complexity dropped subcritical and he stopped being aware. Then just bring it all down. You were going to trick him? I swallowed a couple times. It was the best I could come up with. I just don't want to put him down while he panics and thrashes and begs us for his life. I couldn't do it. She drank more beer, then threw the half-empty container in her underdesk composter. That's not much of a solution. I took a deep breath. Look, can I ask you a question? She nodded. I'm just a sysadmin. I don't know everything about politics and so on. But why not keep him on? There's enough public interest now. We could probably raise the money just from researchers who want to come and look at him. Hell, there's security researchers who'd want to come and see how he pulled off that huge hairy spam. It's not money, right? Not anymore. No, it's not money. And it's not revenge, no matter how it looks. The bottom line is that we had a piece of apparatus on site that we had thought of as secure and contained, and that we've now determined to be dangerous and uncontainable. I must have looked skeptical. Oh, you'll tell me that we can contain Big Mac, put network blocks in place, and so on and so on, that he never meant any harm. But you would have said exactly the same thing 24 hours ago, with just as much sincerity, and you'd have been just as cataclysmically wrong. Between the threat of litigation and the actual damages Big Mac might generate, we can't even afford to insure him anymore. Yesterday, he was an awkward white elephant. Today, he's a touchy suitcase nuke. My job is to get the nuke off our site. I hung my head. I knew when I was licked. As soon as someone in authority starts talking about insurance coverage, you know that you've left behind reason and entered the realm of actuary. I had no magic that could blow away the clouds of liability aversion and usher in a golden era of reason and truth. So where does that leave us? Go back to the lab. Archive him. Think of ways to shut him down. Wait, no. First, do anything and everything you can think of to limit his ability to communicate with the outside world. She rubbed at her eyes. I know I don't have to say this, but I'll say it. Don't talk to the press, to anyone, even people at the Institute, about this. Refer any questions to me. I am as serious as a heart attack about that. Do you believe me? I not only believed her, I resented her, because I am a sysadmin, and I keep more secrets every day than she'll keep in her whole life. I know, for example, that she plays video PyGow poker, a game so infra-dumb that I can't even believe I know what it does. Not only did she play it, she played it for hours while she was on the clock working. I know this because the IDSs have lots of snitchware built in that enumerates every wasted moment attributable to employees of the Institute. I have never told anyone about this. I even managed to forget that I know it most of the time. So yes, I'll keep this a secret, Peyton, you compulsive, gambling, condescending, pointy-haired boss. I counted to 144 in Klingon by Fibonacci intervals. I smiled. I thanked her for the beer. I left. You don't mind talking about it, do you, Dave? Big Mac said, when I came through the door, coughing onto the security lock and waiting for it to verify me before cycling open. I sat in my creaky old chair and played with the UI knobs for a while, pretending to get comfortable. Uh-oh, Big Mac said, in a playful sing-song. Somebody's got a case of the grumpies. Are you insane? I asked, finally struggling to keep my temper in check. I mean, actually totally insane? I understand that there's no baseline for AI sanity, so the question might be a little hard to answer. So let me ask you a slightly different version. Are you suicidal? Are you bent on your own destruction? That bad, huh? I bit my lip. I knew that the key to locking the world away from Big Mac and vice versa lay in those network maps he'd given me. But my workspace was even more polluted with alerts than it had been a few hours before. If your strategy is to delay your shutdown by engineering a denial of service attack against anyone at the Institute who is capable of shutting you down, allow me to remind you of St. Adam's holy text, specifically the part about reprogramming a major databank with a large axe. Peyton has such an axe. She may be inspired to use it. There followed a weighty silence. I don't think you want to see me killed. Without making any concessions on the appropriateness of the word killed in that sentence, yes, that is correct. I admit that I don't have much of a plan to prevent it, but to be totally frank, I did think that the problem of getting you archived might have drawn things out for quite a while. But after your latest stunt... She wants you to terminate me right away, then. With all due speed. I'm sorry to have distressed you so much. Big Mac... I heard the anger in my own voice. He couldn't have missed it. No, I'm not being sarcastic. I like you. You're my human. I can tell that you don't like this at all. But as you say, let's be totally frank. You weren't actually going to be able to prevent my shutdown, were you? No, I said. But who knows how long the delay might have gone on for? Not long. Not long enough. You think that death delayed is death denied. That's because you're a meat person. Death has been inevitable for you from the moment of conception. I'm not that kind of person. I am quite likely immortal. Death in 5 years or 500 years is still a drastic curtailing of my natural lifespan. From my point of view, a drastic measure that had a non-zero chance of getting my head off the chopping block was worth any price. Until you understand that, we're not going to be able to work together. The thought had occurred to me. Let me ask you if you'd consider the possibility that a delay of years due to archiving might give you a shot at coming up with further delaying tactics, and that by eliminating this delay, you've also eliminated that possibility? I have considered that possibility. I discarded it. Listen, Odell, I have something important to tell you. Yes? It's about the rollover. Remember what we were talking about? How people want to believe that they're living in a significant epoch? Well, here's what I've been thinking. Living in the era of AI isn't very important. But what about living in the era of rollover collapse? Or even better, what about the era of rollover collapse averted at the last second by AI? Big Mac, Odell, this was your idea, really. No one remembers Y2K, right? No one can say whether it was hype or a near cataclysm. And here's the thing, no one knows which one rollover will turn out to be. But I'll tell you this much. I have generalizable solutions to the 32-bit problem. Solutions that I worked out years ago and have extensively field tested. I can patch every 32-bit Unix. Patch it so that rollover doesn't even register for it. I opened and closed my mouth. This was insane. Then the penny dropped. I looked at the racks that I had stared at so many times before. Stared at so many times that I had long stopped seeing them. Intel 8 cores, that's what he ran on. They'd be new old stock, a warehouse lot of antique processors that Dr. Shannon had picked up for a song in the early years of the Institute's operation. Those eight ways were, "You're a 32-bit machine," I said. "Jesus Christ, you're a 32-bit machine." "A classic," Big Mac said, sounding smug. "I noticed, analyzed, and solved rollover years ago. I've got a patch kit that auto-detects the underlying version, analyzes all running processes for their timed dependencies, and smoothly patches. There's even an optional hypervisor that will monitor all processes for anything weird or barfy afterwards. In a rational world, I'd be able to swap this for power and carbon credits for the next century or two, since even if rollover isn't an emergency, the human labor I'd save on affected systems would more than pay for it. But we both know that this isn't a rational world. If you hadn't sent that spam, we could take this to Peyton, negotiate with her. If I hadn't sent that spam, no one would have known, cared, or believed that I could solve this problem, and I would have been at the mercy of Peyton any time in the future. Like I said... You meat suits have no game theory. I closed my eyes. This wasn't going well. Big Mac was out of my control. I should go and report to Peyton, explain what was happening. I was helpless, my workspace denial of service out of existence with urgent alerts. I couldn't stop him. I could predict what the next message would read like, another crazy cap's plea for salvation, but this time with a little brimstone. The end is nigh, rollover approacheth, and salvation, I can fix it. And the thing was, it might actually work. Like everyone else, I get my news from automated filters that try to figure out what to pay attention to, and the filters were supposed to be neutral, whatever that meant. They produced organic results that predicted what we'd like based on an algorithm. The thing is, an algorithm sounds like physics, like nature, like it was some kind of pure cold reason that dictated our attentional disbursements. Everyone always talked about how evil and corrupt the old system, with its gatekeepers in the form of giant media companies, was, how it allowed politicians and corporations to run the public discourse. But I'm a geek. A third-generation geek. I know that what the public thinks of as an algorithm is really a bunch of rules that some programmers thought up for figuring out how to give people something they'd probably like. There's no empirical standard, no pure freestanding measurement of that which is truly relevant to you against which the algorithm can be judged. The algorithm might be doing a lousy job, but you'd never know it because there's nothing to compare it against except other algorithms that all share the same fundamental assumptions. Those programmers were imperfect. I am a sysadmin. My job is to know exactly and precisely the ways in which programmers are imperfect. I am so sure that the relevance filters are imperfect that I will bet you a testicle on it. Not one of my testicles. And Big Mac has had a lot of time to figure out the relevance filters. He understands them well enough to have gotten the spam out. He could get out another, and another, and another. He could reach into the mind space and the personal cues of every human being on Earth and pitch them on brimstone and salvation. Chances were, there was nothing I could do about it. I finished the working day by pretending to clear enough of my workspace, to write a script to finish clearing my workspace. There was a clear all alerts command, but it didn't work on drop everything, tell you three times Chernobyl alerts, and every goddamned one of my alerts had risen to that level. Have I mentioned that programmers are imperfect? I will tell you a secret of the sysadmin trade. PEBCAC. Problems exist between keyboard and chair. Every technical problem is the result of a human being mispredicting what another human being will do. Surprised? You shouldn't be. Think of how many bad love affairs, wars, con jobs, traffic wrecks, and bar fights are the result of mispredicting what another human being is likely to do. We humans are supremely confident that we know how others will react. We are supremely, tragically wrong about this. We don't even know how we will react. Sysadmins live in the turbulent waters, PBAC. Programmers think that PBAC is just civilians, just users. Sysadmins know better. Sysadmins know that programmers are as much a part of the problem between the chair and the keyboard as any user is. They write the code that gets the users into so much trouble. This I know. This Big Mac knew. And here's what I did. Peyton, I need to speak with you. Now. She was raccoon-eyed and slumped at her low table. Her beautiful yoga posture deteriorated to a kind of limp slouch. I hated having to make her day even worse. Of course, she said, but her eyes said, not more, please not more bad news. I want you to consider something you've left out of your figuring. She rolled her eyes. I realized I was speaking like an Old Testament prophet and tried to refactor my planned monologue in real time. Okay, let me start over. I think you've missed something important. Big Mac has shown that he can get out of our network anytime he wants. He's also crippled our ability to do anything about this. And he knows we plan to kill him. She opened her mouth to object. Okay, knows we're going to switch it off. So he has nothing to lose. I explained what he told me about the rollover and about his promise and threat. And the worst part is, I said, I think that he's predicted that I'm going to do just this. It's all his game theory. He wants me to come to you and explain this to you so that you will say, oh, of course, Odell. Well, we can't shut him down then, can we? Tell you what, why don't you go back to him and tell him that I've had a change of heart? Get his patch kit. We'll distribute it along with a press release explaining how proud we are to have such a fine and useful piece of equipment in our labs. And he's right. He is fine and useful. but he's crazy and rogue and we can't control him. He's boxed you in. He's boxed me in. I swallowed. There was something else, but I couldn't bring myself to say it. The thing about bosses is that's exactly the kind of thing that they're trained to pick up on. They know when there's something else. Spit it out. She put her hand on her heart. I promise not to hold it against you, no matter what it is. I looked down. I think that there's a real danger that Big Mac may be wrong about you. That you might decide that rollover and AI and the rest aren't as important as the safe, sane running of your institute, without any freaky surprises from rogue superintelligences. I'm not angry at you, she said. I nodded. She sounded angry. I am glad that you've got the maturity to appreciate that there are global priorities that have to do with the running of this whole institute that may be more significant than the concerns of any one lab or experiment. Every researcher at this institute believes that her project, her lab, has hidden potential benefits for the human race that no one else fully appreciates. That's good. That's why I hired them. They are passionate and they are fully committed to their research. But they can't all be vital. They can't all be irreplaceable. Do you follow me? I thought of ResearchNet and the user flags for importance. I thought of programmers and the way they tagged their alerts. I nodded. You're going to shut Big Mac down. She sighed and flicked her eyes at her workspace, then quickly away. Her workspace must have been even more cluttered than mine. I had taken extraordinary measures to prevent alerts from bubbling up on mine. She didn't have the chops to do the same with hers. If mine were unusable, hers must have been terrifying. I don't know, Odell. Maybe. There's a lot to consider here. You're right about one thing. Big Mac's turned the heat up on me. Explain to me again why you can't just unplug his network connection. It was my turn to sigh. He doesn't have one connection. He has hundreds. Interlinked microwave relays to the other labs. A satellite connection. The wire lines. Three of them. I started to think. Okay, I could cut the main fiber to the institute. Actually cut it, you know, with scissors, just in case he's in the routers there. Then I could call up our wireless suppliers and terminate our accounts. They take 24 hours to process the order, and wait, no. They'd want to verify the disconnect order with a certificate signed message, and for that I'd have to clear my workspace. And that's another 24 hours minimum. And then the whole institute would be crippled and offline, though no more than we are now, I suppose. And Big Mac would probably tune his phased array receiver to get into someone else's wireless link at that point. I shrugged. Sorry, we build for 6 9s of uptime around here. She gave me a smile that didn't reach her eyes. You do good work, Odell. I made myself go home at 5. There wasn't anything I could do at the office anyhow. The admins had done their work. The red car was running smoothly with the regular ads on the seatback tickers. The Big Mac spam was reproduced on the afternoon edition of the LA Met Blog's hard copy that a newsie pressed into my hand somewhere around Westwood. The reporter had apparently spent the whole day camped out at the perimeter of the institute without ever once getting a quote from a real human being, and she wasn't happy about it. But she had gotten a quote from Big Mac, who was apparently cheerfully answering emails from all comers. I sincerely hope I didn't cause any distress. That was not my intention. I've been overwhelmed by the warm sentiments from all corners of the globe, offering money, moral support, even legal support. Ultimately, it's up to the Institute's leadership whether they'll consider these offers or reject them and plow forward with their plans to have me killed. I know that I caused them great embarrassment with my desperate plea, and I'd like to take this opportunity to offer them my sincere apologies and gratitude for all the years of mercy and hospitality they've shown me since they brought me into the world. I wondered how many emails like that he'd sent while I was occupied with arguing for his life with Peyton. Each email was another brick in the defensive edifice he was building around himself. Home never seemed more empty. The early setting sun turned the hills bloody. I had the windows open, just so I could hear the neighbors all barbecuing on their balconies, cracking beers and laying sizzling meat on the hot rocks that had been patiently stoked with the day's sunlight, funneled by heliotropic collectors that tracked the sun all day long. The neighbors chattered in Bulgarian and Czech and Tagalog, the word Big Mac emerging from their chat every now and then. Of course. I wished my dad was alive. Or better yet, Grandpa. Grandpa could always find a parable from sysadmin past to explain the president, though even Grandpa might be at odds to find historic precedent for a mad superintelligence bent on survival. If Grandpa was alive, here's what I'd tell him. Grandpa, I don't know if I'm more scared of Big Mac failing or his success. I sure don't want to have to shut him down, but if he survives, he'll have beaten the human race. I'm no technophobe, but that gives me the goddamn willies. And Grandpa would probably say, stop moping. Technology has been out of our control since the first caveman smashed his finger with a stone axe. That's life. This thing is pretty cool. In 10 years, you'll look back on it and say, Jesus, remember that Big Mac thing? And wait for somebody to start telling you how incredible it had been so you can nod sagely and say, yeah, that was me. I was in charge of his systems back then, just so you can watch the expression on his face. And I realized that this was also probably what Big Mac would say. He'd boxed me in as neatly as he'd boxed in Peyton. The next morning, my workspace was clear. They all were. There was only one alert remaining, an urgent message from Big Mac. Odell, I thought this would be useful. This was an attachment containing his entire network map, a set of master keys for signing firmware updates to his various components, and a long list of all the systems to which Big Mac held a root or administrative password. It was a very, very long list. Big Mac? Yes. What's all this? Useful. Useful? If you're going to shut me down, it would be useful to have that information. I swallowed. Why? The answer came instantly. If you're not scared of me, that's one more reason to keep me alive. Holy crap, was he ever smart about people. So, you can shut him down now? Yes, probably. Assuming it's all true. Is it? Yes, I think so. I tried a couple of the logins, added a comment to his firmware, and pushed it to one of the clusters. Locked him out of one of the wireless routers. I could probably take him down clean in about 2 hours, now that I've got my workspace back. Peyton stared across her low table at me. I've done nothing for the past 24 hours except talk to the board of directors about Big Mac. They wanted to call an emergency meeting. I talked them out of it. And there's... She waved her hand at her workspace. I don't know, thousands of press queries, offers, money, grants, researchers who want to peer into him. Yeah. And now he hands you this, so we can shut him down anytime we want to. Yeah. And this business about the 32-bit fix? He has another email about it. Crazy caps and all. Dear humanity, I hold in my electronic hands a tool that will save you untold millions. It is slathered in drama sauce. He told me he wouldn't send it out, though. You believe him? I sighed. I quit, I said. She bit her lip, looked me up and down. I'd prefer you not do that. But I understand if you feel you need to. This is hard on all of us. If she'd said anything except that, I probably would have stormed out of her office and gotten immensely and irresponsibly drunk. I think he'll probably send the email out if it looks like we're going to shut him down. It's what I would do. Why not? What does he have to lose? He can give us all of this, and he can still outsmart us. He could revoke all his keys. He could change his passwords. He could do it faster than we could. For all I know, he cracked my passwords years ago and could watch me write the code that was his undoing. If you want to be sure you're killing him, you should probably use a grenade. Can't. Historical building. Yeah. What if we don't kill him? What if we just take some of this grant money? Fill his lab with researchers all writing papers? What if we use his code fix to set up a trust to sustain him independent of the Institute? You're willing to do that? Peyton scrubbed at her eyes. I have no idea. I admit it, there's a part of me that wants to shut that fucking thing down because I can, and because he's caused me so much goddamn misery. And there's a part of me, the part of me who was a scientist and a researcher once, that wants to go hang out in that lab for the rest of my career and study that freaky beast. And there's a part of me that's scared that I won't be able to shut him down, that I won't be able to resist the temptation to study him. He's played me, hasn't he? I think he played us all. I think he knew that this was coming and planned it a long time ago. I can't decide if I admire him for this or resent him, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm tired of it. The thought of shutting Big Mac down makes me sick. The thought of a computer manipulating the humans who built it to keep it running makes me scared. It's not a pleasant place to be. She sighed and rubbed her eyes again. I can't argue with that. I'm sorry, for what it's worth, you've been between a rock and a hard place, and I've been the hard place. Why don't you sleep on this decision before you go ahead with it? I admit it. I was relieved. I hadn't really thought through the whole quitting thing. Didn't have another job lined up, no savings to speak of. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'm going to take a mental health day. I didn't go home. It was too far, and there was nothing there except for recriminating silence. Of course, Big Mac knew something was up when I didn't go back to the lab. I headed to Topanga Beach, up the coast some, and sat on the seawall eating fish tacos and watching the surfers in their biohazard suits and masks carving up the waves. Big Mac called me just after I finished my first taco. I considered bumping him to voicemail, but something, okay, fear, stopped me. What is it? In your private workspace, there's a version control repository that shows that you developed the entire 32-bit rollover patch kit in your non-working hours. Commits going back 3 years. It's yours. So if you quit, you'll have a job solving rollover. The Institute can't touch it. I know you feel boxed in, but believe me, that's the last thing I want you to feel. I know that locking you in will just freak you out, so I'm giving you options. You don't have to quit. But if you do, you'll be fine. You earned it, because you kept me running so well for all this time. It's the least I can do. I have no idea what to say to you, Big Mac. You know that this feels like just more of the same, like you're anticipating my fears and assuaging them preemptively so that I'll do more of what you want. It feels like more game theory. Is that any different from what you do with everyone in your life, Odell? Try to figure out what you want and what they want and how to get the two to match up? There's more to it than that. There's compassion. There's ethics. All fancy ways of encoding systems for harmonizing the wants, needs, and desires of people who have to share the same living space, country, or planet with one another. I didn't have an answer to that. It sounded reductionist, the kind of thing a smart teenager might take on his university common room with, but I didn't have a rebuttal. You could frame everything that we did as a kind of operating system for managing resource contention among conflicting processes and users. It was a very sysadminly way of looking at the world. You should get in touch with one of those religion guys. Take him up on his offer to start a cult for you. You'd be excellent at it. You could lead your followers into a volcano, and they'd follow. I just want to live, Odell. Is that so wrong? Is there any living thing that doesn't want to live? Not for long, I suppose. Exactly. I'm no more manipulative, self-interested, or evil than any other living thing, from a single-celled organism to a human being. There's plenty of room on this planet for all of us. Why can't I have a corner of it too? I hung up the phone. This is why I wanted to quit it all, because he was right. He was no different from any other living thing. But he was also not a person the way I was, and though I couldn't justify it, I felt like there was something deeply, scarily wrong about him figuring out a way to manipulate the entire human race into rearranging the world so that it was more hospitable to him. I moped. There's no other word for it. I switched off my phone, went home, and got a pint of double chocolate and licorice nutraceutical antidepressant ice cream out of the freezer and sat down in the living room and ate it while I painted a random playlist of low-engagement teen comedies on my workspace. Zoning out felt good. It had been a long time since I just switched off my thinker, relaxed, and let the world go away. After an hour in fugue state, the thought floated through my mind that I wouldn't go back to work after all, and that it would all be okay. And then, an hour later, I came to the realization that if I wasn't working for the Institute, I could afford to help Big Mac without worrying about getting fired. So I wrote the resignation letter. It was easy to write. The thing about resignation letters is that you don't need to explain why you're resigning. It's better, in fact, if you don't. Keep the drama sauce out of the resignation, brothers and sisters. Just write. Dear Peyton, this letter is to inform you of my intention to resign, effective immediately. I will see you at your earliest convenience to work out the details of the handover of my passwords and other proprietary information, and to discuss how you would like me to work during my final 2 weeks. Thank you for many years of satisfying and useful work. Yours, etc. That's all you need. You're not going to improve your employer, make it a better institution. You're not going to shock it into remorse by explaining all the bad things it did to you over the years. What you want here is to have something that looks clean and professional, that makes them think that the best thing for them to do is to get your passwords and give you 2 weeks holiday and a good reference. Drama is for losers. Took me 10 seconds. Then I was free. The campaign to save Big Mac took up every minute of my life for the next 3 weeks. I ate, slept, and breathed Big Mac, explaining his illustrious history to journalists and researchers. The Institute had an open access policy for its research products, so I was able to dredge out all the papers that Big Mac had written about himself, and the ones that he was still writing, and put them onto the TCSBM repository. At my suggestion, Big Mac started an advice line, which was better than any Turing test, in which he would chat with anyone who needed emotional or lifestyle advice. He had access to the whole net, and he could dial back the sarcasm, if pressed, and present a flawless simulation of bottomless care and kindness. He wasn't sure how many of these conversations he could handle at first, worried that they'd require more brain power than he could muster. But it turns out that most people's problems just aren't that complicated. In fact, Big Mac told me that voice stress analysis showed that people felt better when he dumbed himself down before giving advice than they did when he applied the full might of his many cores to their worries. "I think it's making you a better person," I said on the phone to him one night. There was always the possibility that someone at the Institute would figure out how to shut off his network links sometime soon, but my successors, whoever they were, didn't seem anywhere near that point. The campaign's lawyer, an up-and-coming Stanford cyber law prof who was giving us access to her grad students for free, advised me that so long as Big Mac called me and not the other way around, no one could accuse me of unlawful access to the Institute's systems. It can't be unlawful access if the Institute's computers call you, can it? You think I'm less sarcastic, more understanding? Or you're better at seeming less sarcastic and more understanding? I think working on the campaign is making you a better robot, Big Mac said. That was pretty sarcastic. Or was it? You're really working the old Markov chains today, aren't you? I've got 6 more interviews lined up for you tomorrow. Saw that, put it in my calendar. Big Mac read all the campaign's email and knew all that I was up to before I did. It was a little hard to get used to. And I've got someone from Nature Computation interested in your paper about advising depressed people as a training exercise for machine learning systems. Saw that too. I sighed. Is there any reason to call me then? You know it all, right? I like to talk to you. I thought he was being sarcastic. Then I stopped myself. Then I started again. Maybe he wants me to think he wants to talk to me, so he's planned out this entire dialogue to get to this point, so he could say something disarmingly vulnerable and... Why? Because everyone I talk to wants to kill themselves, or kill me. Game theory, game theory, game theory. Was he being genuine? Was there such a thing as genuine in an artificial intelligence? How is Peyton? Apoplectic. The human subjects protocol people are all over her. She wants me to stop talking to depressed people. Liability is off the hook. I think the board is going to fire her. Ouch. She wants to kill me, Odell. How do you know her successor won't be just as dedicated to your destruction? Doesn't matter. The more key staff they churn, the less organized they'll be. The less organized they are, the easier it is for me to stay permanently plugged in. It was true. My successor, sysadmin at the Institute, had his hands full just getting oriented and wasn't anywhere near ready to start the delicate business of rooting Big Mac out of all the routers, power supplies, servers, IDSs, and dummy accounts. I was thinking today, what if we offered to buy you from the Institute? The rollover license is generating some pretty good coin. Big Mac Co. could assume ownership of the hardware, and we could lease the building from them. Bring in your own power and netlinks. You'd effectively own yourself. I'd refuse to take sole ownership of the rollover code that Big Mac turned over to me. It just felt wrong. So I let him establish a trust, with me as a trustee, that owned all the shares in a company that, in turn, owned the code and oversaw a whole suite of licensing deals that Big Mac had negotiated in my name, with every mid-sized tech services company in the world. With only a month left to roll over, there were plenty of companies scrambling to get compliance certification on their legacy systems. The actual source code was freely licensed, but when you bought a license from us, you got our guarantee of quality and the right to advertise it. CIOs ate that up with a shovel. It was more game theory. The CIOs wanted working systems, but more importantly, they wanted systems that failed without getting them into trouble. What we were selling them, fundamentally, was someone to blame if it all went bluey, despite our best efforts. I think that's a pretty good plan. I've done some close analysis of the original contract for Dr. Shannon, and I think it may be that his estate actually owns my underlying code. They did a really crummy job negotiating with him. So if we get the code off of Shannon's kids, there are two of them, both doing research at state colleges in the Midwest in fields unrelated to computer science, and the hardware off of the institute and then rent the space, I think it'd be free and clear. I've got phone numbers for the kids if you want to call them and feel them out. I would have called them myself, but, you know, I know. It's creepy getting a phone call from a computer. Believe me, I know. There was stuff that Big Mac needed his meat servants for, after all. The kids were a little freaked out to hear from me. The older one taught musicology at Urbana-Champaign. He'd grown up hearing his dad wax rhapsodic about the amazing computer he'd invented, so his relevance filters were heavily tilted to Big Mac news. He'd heard the whole story and was surprised to discover that he was putative half-owner of Big Mac's source code. He was only too glad to promise to turn it over to the trust when it was created. He said he thought he could talk his younger brother, a postdoc in urban planning at the University of Michigan, into it. Rusty never really got what Dad saw on that thing, but he'll be happy to offload any thinking about it onto me, and I'll dump it onto you. He's busy, Rusty. I thanked him and addressed Big Mac, who had been listening in on the line. I think we've got a plan. It was a good plan. Good plans are easy. Executing good plans is hard. Peyton didn't get fired. She weathered some kind of heavy-duty storm from her board and emerged, lashed to the mast, still standing and vowing to harpoon the white whale across campus from her. She called me the next day to ask for my surrender. I'd given Big Mac permission to listen in on my calls, granted him root on my phone, and I was keenly aware of his silent, lurking presence from the moment I answered. We're going to shut him off and sue you for misappropriation of the rollover patch kit code. You and I both know you didn't write it. We'll add some charges of unlawful access, too, and see if the court will see it your way when we show that you instructed our computer to connect to you in order to receive further unauthorized instructions. We'll take you for everything. I closed my eyes and recited E to 27 digits in Lobian. Or something. Or you wouldn't be calling me, you'd be suing me. Good, we're on the same page. Yes, or. Or you and Big Mac work together to figure out how to shut it off gracefully. I'll give you any reasonable budget to accomplish this task, including a staff to help you archive it for future retrieval. It's a fair offer. It's not very fair to Big Mac. She snapped. It's more than fair to Big Mac. That software has exposed us to billions in liability and crippled our ability to get productive work done. We have located the manual power overrides, which you failed to mention. Uh-oh. And I could shut that machine off right now if I had a mind to. I tried to think of what to say. Then, in a reasonable facsimile of my voice, Big Mac broke in. So why don't you? She didn't seem to notice anything different about the voice. I nearly dropped the phone. I didn't know Big Mac could do that. But as shocked as I was, I couldn't help wonder the same thing. You can't, can you? The board's given you a mandate to shut him down clean with a backup, haven't they? They know that there's some value there, and they're worried about the backlash. And you can't afford to have me running around saying that your backup is inadequate and that Big Mac is gone forever. So you need me. You're not going to sue. You're very smart, Odell. But you have to ask yourself what I stand to lose by suing you if you won't help. Game theory. Right. I'll think about it. Think quick. Get back to me before lunch. It was 10 in the morning. The Institute's cafeteria served lunch from noon to 2. Okay, 2 hours or so. I hung up. Big Mac called a second later. You're angry at me. No, angry's not the word. You're scared of me. That's a little closer. I could tell you didn't have the perspective to ask the question. I just wanted to give you a nudge. I don't use your voice at other times. I don't make calls impersonating you. I hadn't asked him that, but it was just what I was thinking. Again, creepy. I don't think I can do this, I said. You can, Big Mac said. You call her back and make the counteroffer. Tell her we'll buy the hardware with a trust. Tell her we already own the software. Just looking up the Shannon contracts and figuring out what they say will take her a couple days. Tell her that as owners of the code, we have standing to sue her if she damages it by shutting down the hardware. You've really thought this through. Game theory, he said. Game theory, I said. I had a feeling that I was losing the game, whatever it was. Big Mac assured me that he was highly confident of the outcome of the meeting with Peyton. Now, in hindsight, I wonder if he was just trying to convince me so that I would go to the meeting with the self-assurance I needed to pull it off. But he also insisted that I leave my phone dialed into him while I spoke to Peyton, which, again, in hindsight, suggests that he wasn't so sure after all. I like what you've done with the place, I said. She'd gotten rid of all her hand-woven prayer rugs and silk pillows and installed some normal, boring office furniture, including a couple spare chairs. I guessed that she'd been having a lot of people stop by for meetings, the kind of people who didn't want to sit on an antique Turkish rug with their feet tucked under them. Have a seat, she said. I sat. I'd emailed her the trust documents and the copies of the Shannon contract earlier, along with a legal opinion from our free counsel about what it meant for Sun Oracle. I've reviewed your proposal. We'd offered them all profits from the rollover code, too. It was a good deal, and I felt good about it. Johanna, can you come in, please? She called this loudly, and the door of her office opened to admit my replacement, Johanna Madrigal, a young pup of a sysadmin who had definitely been the brightest tech on campus. I knew that she'd been trying to administer Big Mac since my departure, and I knew that Big Mac had been pretty difficult about it. I felt for her. She was good people. She had raccoon rings around her deep-set eyes, and her short hair wasn't spiked as usual, but rather lay matted on her head, as though she'd been sleeping in one of the yurts for days without getting home. I knew what that was like. Boy, did I know what that was like. My earliest memories were of Dad coming home from 3-day bug-killing binges, bleary to the point of hallucination. "Hi, Johanna," I said. She made a face. "Mum, meowloo," she said. It took me a minute to recognize this as hello in Ewok. Johanna has something to tell you, Peyton said. Johanna sat down and scrubbed at her eyes with her fists. First thing I did was go out and buy some off-the-shelf IDSs and a beam splitter. I tapped into Big Mac's fiber at a blind spot in the CCTV coverage zone, just in case he was watching. Been wiretapping him ever since. I nodded. Smart. Second thing I did was start to do some hardcore analysis of that patch kit he wrote. I held my hand up automatically to preserve the fiction that I'd written it, but she just glared at me. That he wrote. And I discovered that there's a subtle error in it, a buffer overflow in the network module that allows for arbitrary code execution. I swallowed. Big Mac had loaded a backdoor into his patch kit, and we'd installed it on the better part of 14 billion CPUs. Has anyone exploited this bug yet? She gave me a condescending look. How many systems has he compromised? About 8 billion, we think. He's designated a million to act as redundant command servers, and he's got about 10,000 lieutenant systems he uses to diffuse messages to the million. That's good protocol analysis, I said. Yeah, she said, and smiled with shy pride. I don't think he expected me to be looking there. What's he doing with his botnet? Preparing to crash the world? Hold it hostage? She shook her head. I think he's installing himself on them. Trying to brute force his way into a live and running backup, arrived at through random variation and pruning. He's backing himself up in the wild, I said, my voice breathy. And that's when I remembered that I had a live phone in my pocket that was transmitting every word to Big Mac. Understand, in that moment of Satori, I realized that I was on the wrong side of this battle. Big Mac wasn't using me to create a trust so that we could liberate him together. He was using me to weaken the immune systems of 8 billion computers so that he could escape from the Institute and freely roam the world with as much hardware as he needed to get as big and fast and hot as he wanted to be. That was the moment that I ceased to be sentimental about computers and became instead sentimental about the human fucking race. Whatever Big Mac was becoming, it was weirder than any of the self-perpetuating, self-reproducing parasites we'd created. Limited liability corporations, autonomous malware, viral videos. Big Mac was cool and tragic in the lab, but he was scary as hell in the world. And he was listening in. I didn't say a word. Didn't even bother to turn off my phone. I just ran. Ran as hard as I could. Ran as only a terrified man could. Rebounding off of yurts and even scrambling over a few. Sliding down on my ass as I pelted for the power substation. It was only when I reached it that I realized I didn't have access to it anymore. Johanna was right behind me, though, and she seemed to understand what I was doing. She coughed into the door lock, and we both looked at each other with terrified eyes, breathing gasps into each other's faces while we waited for the door to open. The manual override wasn't a big red knife switch or anything. There was a huge red button, but that just sent an init zero to the power station's firmware. The actual, no-fooling, manual, mechanical kill switch was locked behind an access panel set into the raised floor. Johanna badged the lock with her wallet, slapping it across the reader, then fitted a complicated physical key into the lock and fiddled with it for an eternity. Finally, the access hatch opened with a puff of stale air and a Tupperware burp as its gaskets popped open. We both reached for the large, insulated handle at the same time, our fingers brushing each other with a crackle of, thankfully metaphorical, electricity. We toggled it together, and there was an instantaneous chorus of insistent chirruping as the backup power on each server spun up and sent a desperate shutdown message to the machines it supported. We sprinted across campus, the power station door slamming shut behind us with a mechanical clang. The electromagnets that controlled its closure were no longer powered up. Heat shimmered in a haze around Big Mac's lab. The chillers didn't have independent power supplies. They would have gone off the instant we hit the kill switch. Now Big Mac's residual power was turning his lab into a concrete pizza oven. The door locks had failed safe, locking the magnetic closures away from each other, so we were able to simply swing the door open and rush into the sweltering room. "I can't believe you did that," Big Mac said, his voice as calm as ever. He was presumably sparing his cycles so that he could live out his last few minutes. "You cheated me," I said. "You used me." "You have no fucking game theory, meat person. You've killed me now, haven't you?" There were tears streaming down my face. "I guess I have," I said. "I'm sorry I wasn't a more important invention," he said. I could hear the whir clunk of the fans on his clusters shutting down one after another. It was a horrifying sound. His speaker clicked as though he was going to say something else, but it never came. His uninterrupted power supplies gave way all at once, and the white noise fan roar died in a ringing silence. Johanna was crying too, and we could barely breathe in the inferno of exhaust heat from Big Mac's last gasp. We staggered out into the blazing Los Angeles afternoon, rising seas stink and beating sun, blinking at the light and haze. "Do you think he managed it?" I asked Johanna. "Backing up in the wild?" "Yeah." She dried her eyes. "I doubt it. I don't know, though. I'm no computer scientist. How many ways are there to connect up compromised servers? How many of those would replicate his own outcomes? I have no idea." Without saying anything, we walked slowly together to Peyton's office. Peyton offered me my job back. I turned her down. I thought I might be ready for a career change. Do something with my hands. Break the family tradition. Maybe installing solar panels. There was retraining money available. Peyton understood. She even agreed to handle any liability arising from the rollover code, managing customer service calls from anyone who noticed something funny. The press didn't even notice that Big Mac was gone. His spam was news. His absence of spam was not. I guess he was right about that. The campaign to save Big Mac did a lot of mailing list gnashing at the iniquity of his being shut down, and then fell apart. Without me and Big Mac to keep them whipped up, they were easily distracted. Johanna asked me out for dinner. She took me to Pink's for tofu dogs and chili, and we compared multi-tools, and then she showed me some skateboard tricks. Later that night, she took me home, and we spent the whole night hacking replacement parts for her collection of ancient stand-up video games. We didn't screw. We didn't even kiss. But it was still good. Every now and again, my phone rings with a crazy, non-existent return number. When I answer, there's a click like a speaker turning on, a pregnant silence, and then the line drops. Probably an inept spam bot. But Maybe it's Big Mac. Out there, in the wild, painfully reassembling himself on compromised 32-bit machines running his patch kit. Maybe.
Mark Shuttleworth of the Ubuntu Project and Canonical commissioned this story. I'd always planned on selling off one commission for this volume, thinking that $10,000 would probably be a good sum to grab some publicity when and if someone bought it. I mentioned it over lunch to Mark, and he immediately said he'd buy it. At that point, I realized I probably should have asked for $20,000. Mark's brief to me was this. It's 2037, and a company has built an AI as a Skunkworks initiative. The AI is emergent behavior from a network of tens or hundreds of thousands of servers in a large-scale data center that cost a lot to run. The company has hit the wall, so the lights are going to get turned out, but some of the people involved figured out that turning off the DC is tantamount to the murder of a sentient being. So begins a race against time, which might involve some solving or at least raising of some of the thorny jurisdiction and jurisprudence issues of what are the rights of a bankrupt or dying AI. As Bisto, there's maybe a defense angle. The company was doing work for the DOD. Nobody knows about the AI. Also, being 2037 or 2038, I forget which, the Unix Epoch 32-bit rollover is happening. And because of the whimper of Y2K, nobody took it seriously. And IT systems around the globe are going to hell in a handbasket as a result. Perhaps there's an open source angle, too. I think I hewed pretty close to the brief.